It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station, broadcasting from atop Signal Hill in historic Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 39 degrees right now. We're looking for showers for the rest of the day, or at least before 3 p.m., a high near 40. So we've almost got that right now. East wind to 15 miles per hour should turn to the south this afternoon and could gust as high as 25. For tomorrow, isolated snow showers before 9 a.m., partly sunny skies after that with a high near 36 tomorrow. South wind to 10 miles per hour should go down to about nothing tomorrow afternoon. Partly cloudy skies tomorrow night with a low around 28. We have a new update from the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization. Senator Stevens chairs a committee that requires legislators to wear face masks during floor sessions. And an update on the vaccine rollout across Alaska. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. President Trump's veto of a $740 billion defense spending bill is facing a potential congressional slapdown when the Senate takes up the question tomorrow. House Republicans have already joined with colleagues across the aisle to endorse a veto override, and now the Senate's top Republican is urging his colleagues to do the same. NPR's James Jones reports.
President Trump had lashed out at Republican leaders in Congress following an overwhelming bipartisan House vote to override his defense bill veto. But McConnell remains determined to enact a spending bill that has passed with bipartisan support each of the last 59 years.
For the brave men and women of the United States Armed Forces, failure is simply not an option. So when it's our turn in Congress to have their backs, failure is not an option either. I would urge my colleagues to support this legislation one more time.
If Senate Republicans follow McConnell's lead, it would be the first time Congress has voted to override a Trump veto. James Jones, NPR News.
With more than 19 million identified cases and 336,000 related deaths, the U.S. leads the world in pandemic numbers. More than 2 million people nationwide have now been inoculated, and experts say it will take months to vaccinate everyone who wants a shot. Today, Vice President-elect Kamala Harris got her shot.
I want to encourage everyone to get the vaccine. It is relatively painless. It happens really quickly. It is safe.
She said she barely felt it. In Michigan, Governor Whitmer is urging everyone, meanwhile, to be extra cautious in the upcoming New Year holidays.
Do what you have been doing. Stay home for New Year's, maybe get some takeout, support your local restaurants and local businesses, but stay close to home and celebrate responsibly.
In South Africa, over a million COVID-19 infections have been recorded, even as the government there laments a casual attitude toward the health crisis. Now, as NPR's Ader Peralta reports, new coronavirus restrictions are moving into place.
On national television, President Cyril Ramaphosa said South Africans had stopped wearing masks and washing their hands and social distancing. In fact, he said during this holiday season, many South Africans were hosting parties.
We have simply let our guard down, and unfortunately, we're now paying the price.
Hospitals in some provinces are nearly overwhelmed with COVID-19 patients, so the government has decided to reimpose restrictions. The sale of alcohol in most gatherings are now banned, and anyone caught without a mask in public could face fines or even jail time. Ader Peralta, NPR News, Nairobi.
Wall Street approaching the close, the Dow down 68, the NASDAQ off 49. This is NPR News in Washington.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization has reported 12 new COVID-19 cases in the Kodiak Island Borough, including 3 community transmission cases, 1 travel-related case, and 8 close contact cases. This brings the current case count for the Kodiak Island Borough to 884 cases since the start of the pandemic, with 69 cases currently classified as active. There have been 37 local hospitalizations to date, with 2 patients currently hospitalized. There have been 5 local deaths to date in Kodiak. Alaska lawmakers will be required to wear face masks during floor sessions when they convene in January, under rules that a committee of legislative leaders adopted on Monday. The joint House-Senate Legislative Council passed a policy that outlines how lawmakers will enforce new rules in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. The council also voted to bar news reporters from floor sessions, as well as to require lawmakers to sit when they speak during floor sessions to reduce the distance that virus particles could spread. Kodiak Republican Senator Gary Stevens chairs the council. He says lawmakers have to protect the people who work for the legislature.
We know the fears that many of our employees have, concerns they have, the questioned health conditions that they have that may not even be aware of, that people are concerned about what may happen to them, and even are considering maybe not working for us if they don't feel safe.
The policies could be changed once the newly elected legislature convenes January 19th. Neither the House nor the Senate have agreed on who will lead their chambers. Palmer Republican Representative Delina Johnson was the only council member to vote against the policies. She says the constituents of legislators who break the rules would be disenfranchised.
When we start making exclusions, we have to be very, very, very careful, especially before when we're talking about this legislature making rules for a legislature that is not yet formed.
Under the new policies, lawmakers who refuse to have their temperature checked or to answer health screening questions would be denied entry into the Capitol. Those who refuse to wear face masks would be required to stay in their offices, and those who test positive for the coronavirus will have to quarantine outside of the Capitol. Legislative leaders have asked that lawmakers be prioritized in vaccine distribution, but State Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink says lawmakers may not be in the groups receiving shots before March. As the COVID-19 vaccine rollout begins across Alaska, people are starting to ask, when is my turn? For the Alaska Vaccine Task Force, the answer to that changes every day as pharmacists match vaccine doses to priority groups. For doctors and technicians, it is a happy scramble to keep up. KUAC's Robin has this report.
Dr. Tessa Walker Linderman is the DHSS lead for the Alaska COVID-19 Vaccination Task Force. She told reporters Monday the state health department is still in the very early part of the vaccine rollout.
We are still in phase 1A in terms of who Alaska is vaccinating, but discussions about future phases are happening.
Federal health officers are shipping doses of both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines as fast as they can be manufactured and packaged. Dr. Ann Zink, Alaska's chief medical officer, says the state received about 60,000 doses of the vaccine this month, about 10 times more than expected.
At the beginning of December, we thought we were getting like 6,000, just over 6,000 doses to start. Again, we've had to change plans drastically and dramatically on a very regular basis. So we are working on these like super tight timeframes. And so when people say like, I want to know what date I am, like we don't know how much we're getting in next week.
First come, first served appointments for those last folks in Phase 1A, essential healthcare workers, will be opened on Wednesday on the state's COVID-19 website, covidvax.alaska.gov. Those appointments will begin January 4th. The next big question is, who will be vaccinated in Phase 1B, much later in January? The Federal Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, or ACIP, determines the priority groups for who should get the vaccine first, but leaves it up to states and tribes to make the allocations. ACIP recommends that Phase 1B includes people age 75 and older, and frontline essential workers, such as emergency responders, teachers, and grocery store workers. Alaska has its own Vaccine Allocation Advisory Committee. It held a workshop Monday to give an update and take public comment about the next steps. Zink says for Phase 1B, the Allocation Committee is looking at three principles: logistics, science, and equity, to get the vaccine out fast, effectively, and fairly.
Across all sorts of different groups, taking into consideration their work, their ability to protect themselves, the service that they provide, and the increased morbidity and mortality we might see, such as like if a hospital system becomes overwhelmed, age, underlying medical conditions.
For the workshop, the task force received 347 written comments, and 52 people signed up to speak about who in Alaska are those essential workers. Commenters represented groups like electric utilities, older Alaskans, water and wastewater utilities, gas and oil companies, and teachers groups. Here are Stacey Mars, Lee Ryan, Elizabeth Petrasik, and Brent Payne.
We have 39 staffed courts across the state. I would love you to consider all of our staff and judges as essential workers for purposes of vaccine distribution.
Please consider the addition of those serving in the aviation field to be included in Phase 1B of vaccine allocation. A small group of essential frontline Alaskans who quite literally carry the responsibility of delivery of care to much of the state.
Providing vaccines to the staff and residents of the domestic violence shelters and service centers throughout Alaska will allow them to continue to support this vulnerable population in their time of crisis.
We're starting up our fishery in January again. You know, we are frontline workers. We are producing food for our nation's food supply.
ACIP estimates there are 30,000 essential workers in Alaska, 23,000 teachers, and 6,100 first responders, like police and firefighters. Add them together, and maybe 60,000 doses, times two for the booster shot, would cover those groups in Phase 1B. Alaska's Vaccine Allocation Advisory Committee will meet later this week to better define who is in Phase 1B. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Two military installations in the interior have begun administering COVID-19 vaccinations to personnel who need it most because of the demands of their jobs. KUAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
Medical specialists at both Fort Wainwright and Eielson Air Force Base began giving the COVID shots last week to people who are at the top of the list of essential workers.
We first vaccinated emergency services personnel, such as firefighters and police officers, and medical personnel at the hospital.
Fort Wainwright spokesperson Eve Baker said Monday that both soldiers and civilians working in those positions got the first vaccines. She says they volunteered for them because the military, like other institutions, is offering the shots under an emergency authorization that enabled rapid development of the vaccine.
On Fort Wainwright, the vaccination is voluntary. Because of the emergency use authorization, we're not making it mandatory.
The emergency authorization has caused concern among some Americans, but a doctor at Eielson says the vaccine was approved by the Federal Food and Drug Administration. Major Trevor Peterson said in an online talk that only a few of those who got the shot reported mild discomfort during the clinically conducted trial test run.
They screened them for side effects every 7 days throughout the trial period. And what they found, the most common side effects were what you would have assumed to have with any vaccine. So mild soreness of the shoulder, headache, fatigue, body aches, chills.
Both Eielson and Fort Wainwright are using a vaccine developed by Massachusetts-based drug maker Moderna, which requires two shots to be given 28 days apart. An Eielson spokesperson said in an online post that base medical personnel have completed the first round of vaccinations and are now preparing for the next. Baker says for now, vaccinations are ongoing at Fort Wainwright. She says the scheduling of shots there depends largely on the careful logistics necessary for handling the vaccine, up to the point that it's injected into someone's arm.
Because of the amount of doses per vial and because of the unique cold storage and thawing requirements for the vaccines, you know, we have to have a certain number of people lined up at a certain time so they can all receive the vaccine together.
Fort Greely and Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson aren't administering the shots, at least not yet, but a J-Bear spokesperson said Monday that base officials expect they'll begin offering the vaccine early in the coming year. Reporting from Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
One man died and another is missing after a boat capsized in Chignik Lake Saturday afternoon. That's according to a dispatch from the Alaska State Troopers. The Coast Guard recovered the body of 42-year-old Fred Shangan of Chignik Lake Saturday evening. He died from cold water exposure, the trooper said. Nicholas Garner, 39, also of Chignik Lake, is still missing. Taylor Lynn, 24, also in the boat, was rescued. According to troopers, the three men had loaded a snow machine onto the bow of a skiff. Austin McDaniel is a public information officer with the state troopers.
Three individuals were transporting it to the north side of Chignik Lake when they hit a wave and the boat capsized. The skiff floated for about half an hour until they were able to get to the edge of the ice on the lake.
Lind was able to save himself. The troopers report that Shangen could not get off the top of the capsized skiff and succumbed to the cold while it was drifting. Garner hung on to the side of the boat, what was eventually submerged underwater and did not reappear. Troopers say the men were not wearing life vests. Two people were on shore but could not get to the boat to help with the rescue. A second boat arrived to assist them, but troopers say it could not reach the capsized skiff because of ice. Troopers were called to the area around 3 p.m. Saturday, and the Coast Guard arrived about 6:30 p.m. The Coast Guard transported Lind and those trying to help with the rescue to Chignik Bay. All are from Chignik Lake. Local residents have been unable to search for Garner due to a winter storm. Search efforts will resume once the storm clears. There has not been a new positive COVID-19 case reported at Heritage Place for 2 weeks. That means starting today, the residents can leave their rooms for the first time in over 2 months. The long-term care facility, operated by Central Peninsula Hospital, had its first outbreak of COVID-19 in late October after three staff members tested positive. In the weeks that followed, the virus touched 40 of the facility's nearly 50 residents, and four of the residents died. Everyone in the facility was tested for COVID-19 multiple times a week. Since October 26th, residents have been isolated to their private rooms. The facility started allowing those who had recovered from the virus to leave their rooms earlier this month. Now, residents will be able to move around the facility more freely, says hospital spokesman Bruce Richards. Certain group activities like congregate dining will still be prohibited. Soldotna Professional Pharmacy has been vaccinating residents and staff at elder care facilities, including Heritage Place, since the vaccine arrived December 16th. Pharmacy staff have vaccinated 18 residents so far and plan on vaccinating another 12. An additional 14 residents declined the vaccine, according to the hospital. Fort Wainwright officials have given members of the public another 60 days to offer comments on proposals to replace or upgrade the post's old coal-fired heat and power plant. Public comments may now be submitted up until February 22nd on the draft environmental impact statement that describes ongoing problems with the 20-megawatt plant that's been operating for 65 years. The 462-page document also outlines four proposed solutions to the problem, which range in cost from $117 million to $687 million. Fort Wainwright spokesperson Eve Baker says post officials extended the comment period in response to requests from people who want more time to weigh in on the draft EIS.
They had been looking for additional information so they could better inform their comments to us and asked if we could reopen the comment period so they could do that.
Baker says post officials won't schedule another online and telephonic meeting on the draft EIS like the one held on November 9th during the original comment period that ended December 9th. But she says the public has several options to weigh in on the issue.
Comments may be submitted in the same manner as they were during the first comment period via email, written letter, through the form on the website, or phone call.
You can find details on how to submit comments by checking the online version of this story on the KUAC news page. Ketchikan School Board will continue evaluating the district's top administrator Tuesday. The superintendent is facing allegations that she has shortchanged Alaska Native employees and staff. KRBD's Eric Stone has this report.
The board started its evaluation of Superintendent Beth Lougie on December 10th. At that meeting, they heard public criticism that Lougie had not provided Alaska Native teachers and staff with the proper resources to do their jobs. One tribal leader pointed to a widely circulated photo of a cultural coordinator working on the floor because she wasn't provided furniture for a new office. An Alaska Native employee said she was dismissive of subordinates, though another district staffer who was white stepped forward to defend her. Then board members closed the doors for a more than three-hour discussion. The school board president announced at the end of the meeting that the board would conduct a community survey before completing Lougie's evaluation. About 2 weeks later, leaders of Ketchikan's federally recognized tribe issued a letter saying they had no confidence in Lougie's leadership of the school district. The letter from Ketchikan Indian Communities Tribal Council says she's treated Alaska Native staff and parents with, quote, little regard or respect. Lougie has yet to publicly respond to the allegations. She did not answer repeated requests that she respond to the criticism from staff and community members. Lougie's contract says she'll face a review twice a year. She's held the top job in the school district for 2 years. She was promoted to superintendent in late 2018 after the district's previous chief resigned. The board and Lougie agreed to a 2-year contract in February. Lougie's contract allows the board to fire her for good cause without paying severance. Lougie faced complaints that she had mistreated employees in a previous job as principal of a school in Silver City, New Mexico. She denied the allegations earlier this year in an interview with KRBD, saying she had not done anything wrong. A New Mexico labor relations official told KRBD the complaints were settled and withdrawn in 2016. Lougie left the district the following year. Ketchikan's school board meets at 6 p.m. Tuesday in the Ketchikan High School library. Unlike most Ketchikan school board meetings, it will not be live-streamed online nor broadcast on television. Seating is limited and face masks are required. The board is scheduled to hear public comment at the beginning of the meeting before a closed-door session. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. What's best about living in a small fishing town? Kodiak shares its thoughts after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute provides digital and print marketing materials to the Alaska seafood industry. Find thousands of stunning photos, video footage, and sales tools at alaskaseafood.org.
What are some of the best things about living in a small fishing town? There are no malls and limited shopping. It's far from the mainland, and travel can be tricky. Fish Radio talked to Kodiak locals to find out why they choose small-town living.
I came to Kodiak for my job at a museum and really didn't know anything about commercial fishing. But I've learned a bit over the years, and I'm really impressed at the amount of skill and knowledge it takes to be a fisherman. And, you know, I'm really grateful for all the resources and the amount of economic contribution fishing is to Kodiak. It looks like we're moving up in the fishing industry. That makes me proud to live in Kodiak, that we're doing so well.
One of my favorite things about living in Kodiak is in this terrible world economic downturn, we're isolated, not affected as much.
I like that we could pretty much live off the land.
The fishing, the sport fishing, is amazing around here.
I like that it's seasonal. You get to see the boats all in the harbor, and then the next day they're all gone. And I also like all the fresh seafood that is coming in year-round that we get to enjoy.
Fish and boats. I love it all.
Knowing people, having a community setting where we know each other and care for each other.
It's a great place to raise a family.
You get to know a lot of people, and it is a sense of community.
I've lived in small communities for, 20 years or so, but the people here are extremely nice. Like, there are a lot of small towns, but there's something about Kodiak, and the people here are truly amazing. And it's just a beautiful place. There's really nothing like it around Alaska.
Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, serving Alaska's fishing communities since 1910. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Excuse me, I'm on a new diet, nothing but butter cookies. Welcome to your Tuesday, Island Messenger. It is the 29th day of December, the year 2020, for a little bit longer. The sun rose today at 9:54 a.m., and it will set again at 4:31 this afternoon, giving us 6 hours and 36 minutes of glorious daylight. That is a gain of 1 minute and 13 seconds compared to yesterday. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up at exactly 1 p.m. here on the east side. That will be a 9.75-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 7:55 p.m. of minus 0.7 feet. Our next high tide here on the east side will be at 2:30 a.m., 7.25 feet. And our morning low tide here on the east, 7:32 a.m. of 3.15 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a high tide coming up at 1:33 p.m. That will be a 15.57 foot tide, followed by a low tide at 8:19 p.m. of minus 1.25 feet. Your high tide for the wee hours of the morning on the west side will be at 2:44 a.m. of 14.38 feet, and your low tide for tomorrow morning will be at 8:24 a.m. of 3.53 feet. Well, I'm looking at a new weather app here, the Saildrone weather app, Saildrone. And you can learn more about Saildrone at one of my recent Alaska Fisheries reports, unabashed plug. But they have a weather app that they use to navigate their autonomous sailing robots around the world. And it's a cool, cool weather app. You can just Google Saildrone, Saildrone forecast, or Saildrone weather. Saildrone is one word. And it's similar to the Windy app, which is also extremely cool. But just another way to look at the wind swirling around. And you should see this low pressure out in the Bering Sea right now that's taking up the entire gigantic area. It's kind of over by Russia right now. Anyway, looking at the rest of today's forecast, we're looking for a high of 42. For tomorrow, we're looking for a low of 36 overnight and a low of 34 and a high of 36, very similar. And for Thursday, we're looking for a low of 39 degrees and a high of 39 degrees and a low of 33. Mariners, here is your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 995 millibar low 300 nautical miles south of Cordova and its associated front will dissipate this evening over the northern Gulf. A high pressure will build into the Gulf on Wednesday. As a result, our weather, Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore, small craft advisory through Wednesday, south wind to 30 knots right now and seas to 13 feet. For tonight on the east side, southwest winds 30 knots and seas to 15 feet. For tomorrow, southwest 20, seas to 12 feet. And for Thursday, east wind to 35 knots and seas to 22 feet on the east side on Thursday. Over in the Shelikof and Kodiak's west side, east wind to 30 knots right now and seas to 8 feet. For tomorrow, look for southwest winds 20 knots and seas to 5 feet. And for Thursday in the Shelikof, look for east winds to 35 knots and seas to 10 feet. For inside waters, Marmot Island or Marmot Bay and Chiniak Bay, small craft advisory in Chiniak Bay. East wind to 20 knots right now, seas to 6 feet. Tonight, southwest wind to 25 knots and seas to 4 feet. And for Wednesday, southwest 15 should diminish to 10 knots in tomorrow afternoon, seas to 2 feet. In Marmot Bay, east wind to 20 knots right now and seas to 7 feet. For tonight, south winds to 20 knots and seas to 4 feet. And for tomorrow in Marmot Bay, south winds to 15 knots should turn to the southwest and go to 10 knots tomorrow afternoon, seas to 3 feet tomorrow in Marmot Bay. This week, the Kodiak Public Library is offering a burn journal. That's happening tomorrow from 2 p.m. on Zoom. A burn journal is a place to reflect and record your thoughts and feelings as 2020 comes to a close. When you finish it, keep it, add it to your New Year's Eve bonfire, or put it in your wood stove, or whatever you want to do to reduce stress and let go of a strange year. This sounds like a good idea. Geared for tweens, teens, and adults, the Zoom link can be found on the library's web or Facebook page, which is just a cool place to visit at any rate. And you can pick up your journals right now through tomorrow. The library's kindness challenge continues. Spread good cheer and kindness this holiday season. Pick up or download a copy of the challenge, complete 10 or more activities, and a star with your name on it will be hung in the library. return completed challenges by December 31st, so that's coming right up. The library offers home delivery for those unable to get out of the house and curbside pickup at the side door. You can call the library for this service. Their number is 486-8686. And the library is open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. by appointment at 11 a.m., 1 p.m., 3 p.m. for 90-minute visits. You still must wear a mask and follow social distancing guidelines. And the library will be closed on Friday for January 1st. Happy New Year.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.